of Government Hour.
Is telework a goal or a reality for your organization? Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center on federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework, sponsored by Tanberg.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. We have a first. We have two presidents that are going to be on the show. First guest is Frederick V. Rolando. He's president of the National Association of Letter Carriers, and they are very interested, as you might imagine, in a proposal by the U.S. Postal Service to eliminate Saturday delivery. And then in the second half of the hour, we're going to be talking with Carol Bonacero, who's president of the Senior Executives Association, and we're going to be talking about potential recruiting problems in and for the elite federal civil service, federal executive service. And as always, Dorothy Ruminski is our producer, and when things go badly or we run overtime, she makes a remarkable duck-like sound that you will hear in the background. President Rolando, are you on the line?
I am. How are you today?
Hey, thank you very much for coming on. I know you are really slammed these days with this proposal to eliminate Saturday mail service. But could I ask you first, Mr. President, about the National Association of Letter Carriers? I saw in a press release you have something like 250,000 members.
Closer to 280,000. 280,
okay. Well, the interesting thing with the postal unions is when you guys say members, you mean members. You mean card-carrying members, not just who you represent.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of people, and I guess is that the vast majority of letter carriers?
Probably about 93% of them, yes.
That's not a bad sign-up rate, and you don't have the union shop either.
That's correct.
I guess everybody in the country has heard about the proposal to eliminate Saturday mail service. The Postal Service says it's necessary because for a lot of reasons, but they're running out of money. And one thing that they keep mentioning, and it is sort of a mystery to me, and I know you have alluded to it many times, is they're talking about the funding requirements for the postal retirees' retirement system.
Yes. Well, first off, I think it's important to make clear to your listeners that the Postal Service their revenue does not come at all from taxpayer money. It's strictly revenue from postage. I think that's important to understand up front. Now, the Postal Service, like many companies, has been through a lot of changes in the last couple of years due, of course, to the recession and the electronic alternatives to hard copy in general, which has affected a lot of industries. In addition to that, the Postal Service has had to deal with what you just mentioned regarding the pre-funding requirement that I'll get into in a second if you would like.
But, sure.
As a result of that, what we have to do as a company is adapt in four major areas. And those areas involve, number one, the Congress, again, with the reform issue that we'll talk about. It involves the Postal Service's internal structure. The third thing involves the unions with their collective bargaining getting into some win-win solutions to some issues with the Postal Service. And the fourth thing we have to do is really a long-term review of the business model, how we can use the delivery network that we have to best serve America's homes and businesses. Unfortunately, like you said, what the public hears about is a number, $238 billion that the Postal Service is going to lose in 10 years, and we've got to eliminate six-day delivery, and the public's okay with it. Because that's quick news, it doesn't tell the whole story, but that's what has gotten out in the last few weeks, and that's what your listeners are hearing. And I'd like to just touch on those three things. I just told you the four things that need to be done by the Congress, by the employees, by the Postal Service, and so forth. That $238 billion that you read about, deficit over the next 10 years that's projected, assumes that absolutely nothing is done. Okay? None of those things are addressed. It's a worst-case scenario, and that was totally disclosed in the House subcommittee hearing 2 weeks ago, that it was kind of not a real number, because it assumes that we do absolutely nothing to address any of the problems. The second piece of that is you hear over and over that the public is fine with giving up Saturday delivery. And again, if you tell the public the real story, I think you get different results. If you ask the public, would you like to pay more money for postage? Would you like to give up your firstborn, or would you like to give up Saturday delivery? I think they're going to have a tendency to go with giving up Saturday delivery. But if you tell them the truth and you give them the real options, some of the other things that we can do that I'll get into, I think you get a totally different result. And the third piece of that, what you asked about, is the 5-day. And eliminating Saturday delivery does absolutely nothing to address the real issues with the Postal Service. Cutting service to the American people is really just going to put the company further in the hole. It's going to make the Postal Service less attractive to mailers, especially mailers that rely on Saturday delivery. It's going to open the door to others that would find a way to deliver on Saturday. We've already seen evidence of that in the last few weeks in the press. It would limit our future revenue generation by cutting back, you know, our ability to serve the public in different ways if you took Saturday out. There's no evidence that it would save any of the small amount of money in the big picture that the Postal Service is projecting. And again, it would open the door to further cuts in the future. It wouldn't guarantee that we'd have 5-day delivery the way the Postal Service is projecting it. We could end up with 4-day, 3-day, 2-day. It's just a death spiral for the company itself.
Well, what about these, say, roughly 300,000 letter carriers, not to mention probably an equal number of clerks? If they did go to a 5-day week service, wouldn't some of those people lose their jobs?
Well, it's likely that there would be jobs over a term of period that would be eliminated, yes. As to whether or not people would immediately lose their jobs, it would depend how the Postal Service rolled it out. But that's a good point. In an economy where we're looking, where we've got an $11 million job gap with the unemployed, it's for something that already doesn't make sense, it would be kind of silly to eliminate more middle-class jobs. Absolutely. Good point.
Because I don't know if you're familiar with the term Washington Monument Cut, but somebody invented it 40 or 50 years ago, and the idea is that when a federal agency is seeking something from Congress, most often money, and they don't get it, say you're the Interior Department and you run the Washington Monument, you ask for X amount of dollars, the Congress gives you Y less. And so then you announce, leak to the press, or maybe make an announcement that during the tourist season you're going to have to close the Washington Monument, and sorry, or shut down the Smithsonian, or do some other things. And this is supposed to raise a hue and cry from the public to keep those open for the vast tourism business. And Congress caves and gives them more money. I take it this, and they've threatened it before, or they've proposed before eliminating Saturday's service. But this is not a drill, right?
Well, I think Doonesbury characterized it as ask for May, settle for June, so I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Part of their action plan involves the reform also that needs to be done. They don't quite carry it far enough, and the 5 days in addition to that. So the Postmaster General has made it clear in testimony to, I believe it was Senator Durbin in the appropriations hearing, that should this reform take place and the Postal Service get the money back that I'll speak of in a little bit, that he wouldn't even be pursuing the 5-day delivery.
Okay, now how about this? They're talking about a funding problem with retirement for postal employees who are under, I guess, both the old civil service retirement system and the newer federal employees retirement system. Why are you guys different if it's the same system?
Well, here's what happened. The Postal Service, there was a law in 2006 which required that the Postal Service pre-fund their future retiree health benefits. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody, you know, is funding their current retiree health benefits, but this requirement was to pre-fund future retiree health benefits for the next 80 years. Now, no other federal agency is required to do that. No other private business is required to do that. Okay? The Postal Service is required by this law to pre-fund their future retiree health benefits. So let me tell you what that means. In dollars, it means about $5.5 billion per year to the Postal Service to pre-fund. Now, the fund to do this was set up with a surplus in the civil service retirement system. The Postal Service, it was found years ago, had put too much money into the civil service retirement system. And so that surplus, as calculated by the OPM at the time, was transferred to this pre-funding retirement fund for future retiree health benefits, and it was calculated out the next 80 years what it would take to fund in addition to that, and that's where the $5.5 billion a year comes from. What you've seen not enough about in the press is the Postal Service's OIG recently did a report that showed that transfer of the surplus from civil service was short-funded by about $75 billion. So everything you're hearing about the reform for the pre-funding involves taking that $75 billion, again, not taxpayer money, this is money that the Postal Service has put into the civil service fund, and transferring it to the retiree fund, because it's their money, just put it in the correct fund. Once you do that, the Postal Service would no longer need to put $5.5 billion a year in there because the money's already there. Plus, they could pay the current retiree health benefits out of that fund, which is probably about another $2.5 billion. So you're looking at about an $8 billion a year savings, which would put the Postal Service in pretty good shape. If you look at the last 3 years, if it wasn't for these payments that have to be made by only the Postal Service out of all the companies in the country, even having gone through the worst recession since the Great Depression and the loss in volume that we've had from electronic alternatives to hard copy, the Postal Service still made money if it wasn't for these payments.
Well, we need to take a break here, Mr. President, but I want to ask you when we come back about who did this and what you think their motives are. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Have you resolved to take better care of your type 2 diabetes? Lowering blood sugar levels to a healthy range can be a beneficial step. Begin today. If you have type 2 diabetes, you may want to consider volunteering for a clinical research study. Several research studies are evaluating an investigational medication to see if it's safe and can help lower blood sugar. You may qualify if you're at least 18 and take oral metformin alone or with other medications to treat your type 2 diabetes. Qualified participants will receive all study-related care and study medication at no cost and may be compensated for time and travel. Consider volunteering. Call Alternative Primary Care, 1-703-863-6616. That's 1-703-863-6616. 1-703-863-6616. Or visit newdiabetesstudy.com. That's newdiabetesstudy.com.
Federal agencies have been tasked with complying with the recent OMB Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative. Are agencies following through, or are they falling behind the times? Tune in to Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, on Thursday, May 6th at noon, to hear experts from the Government Business Council, GTSI, and Oracle discuss the results of an in-depth study into the transformation of IT environments at federal agencies. Don't miss Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, on Thursday, May 6th at noon, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Here's to you, doctors. After all, yours is the very first face all of us see. You're who all of our mothers hope we'll someday grow up to be. It's you who we run to with a sniffle, a fever, or the odd case of mesenteric lymphadenitis. You fix our broken bones. You mend our broken hearts. You help us with everything from our allergies to, well, our zits. And though it may seem we sometimes don't appreciate all that you endure to keep us well, the endless years of schooling, the 14-hour shifts, the vending machine coffee, or actually having to read medical journals, we do appreciate you. Because when we're feeling our worst, we can count on you to give us your best. You're our healers. You're our heroes. You're our doctors. So from all of us to all of you, thanks. Kaiser Permanente. May you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Listen to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM throughout the day for the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Join the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Jane Norris, mornings from 6 to 10. In Depth with Francis Rose from 1 to 3. And the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, afternoons from 3 to 7. Find all the news you need 24-7 at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Frederick V. Rolando, who's president of the National Association of Letter Carriers, and we're talking about this proposal by the Postal Service to drop Saturday mail service, which he said is would be a death spiral for the Postal Service. It would cause people to go elsewhere, other people to start delivering on Saturdays, and it would make a bad situation worse. And earlier I said, well, good morning, and I'm reminded that we've had listeners in Kuwait, in the Dominican Republic, in Korea, and in Germany who are listening. So whatever time it is where you are, welcome to the show. Mr. President, I was going to ask you about this requirement. That you say no other federal agency, no employer in the country is required to pre-fund retiree health benefits. I don't see how, in the first place, how you can do that, how you can estimate what they're going to be with any accuracy at all, particularly if you're estimating 80 years out.
Yeah, that's been one of the issues also, is the actual liability that dictated the payments that are to be made. And we've had discussions with OPM regarding those calculations themselves to figure out the liability, in addition to the amount that should have been initially transferred from the surplus in the civil service fund.
Do you know the reason or why this was done?
Well, there's two issues with it. It was part of a broader postal reform that took about 14 years to accomplish. The Postal Accountability Enhancement Act of 2006 is what created this, with the understanding that the Postal Service would be able to afford it, quite frankly, and it was a way to also establish the fund by transferring what they perceive that surplus from civil service to be. Unfortunately, it came out just about the time that the housing bubble burst and the recession came into play, and the volume started to drop, and it just became unrealistic. That's one piece. The other piece is, since that time, we've determined the transfer from the civil service surplus was wrong. If you use the historical calculations, you're talking about a $75 billion difference. So, you know, what they did, and the fact that we were the only ones that have to do it, you know, we'll do it. We just need to transfer our money so that we're able to afford it in the Postal Service, and that's what the Congress just needs to take a good look at now, and I think they're willing to do so, is to make the correction.
Well, you know, I wonder if some conspiracy theorists might think that requiring the Postal Service to do this, and then the Postal Service saying the only way they can handle this is to go to 5-day delivery. You use the term death spiral. It's almost as if somebody wanted the Postal Service to go away.
Yeah, I hope not.
Okay, you don't see that on the Hill?
No.
Well, the mail service in the U.S., you know, everybody complains about it, but you're moving jillions of tons of mail a day and a week. It's my understanding that it may well be the best in the world, particularly considering the size of this country.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt it's the best postal service in the world for the price and the service and everything else, and with an amazing delivery network, which is something else I'll get into when I touch on the other three things beyond the reform that's necessary through Congress. You know, internally, which was the second point I made of what we need to move forward with once we get the money shifted through Congress, is the Postal Service is already in their action plan said that they could, in the next 10 years, find probably about $120 billion in internal structuring that they would be able to make up. The third piece, like I said, we've got all four unions entering into collective bargaining this year and next year. And they're all interested in, I don't want to speak for the other unions, but looking at win-win solutions for what we need to adapt to with the Postal Service. For example, my union has been working closely with the Postal Service with the fluctuating volume that we've had in the last couple of years to work together under a new MOU to adjust the letter carrier routes to that fluctuating volume.
Okay, let me ask you about the service and the prices and whatnot. When we get back, we need to take a real short break here at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 27th, 2010. The G Fund stays at $13.25. The F Fund rises 0.05 at $13.69. The C Fund loses 0.33 at $14.11. The S Fund down 0.49 at $18.99. And the I Fund loses 0.66 at $18.23. Your L Funds all lower. The 2040 down 0.36 at $16.46. The 2030 loses 0.30 at $16.19. The 2020 down 0.25 at $15.92. The 2010 loses 0.09 at $15.56. And the L Income drops 0.07 at $14.18. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates says he's satisfied with Pentagon planning to counter the threat posed by Iran's nuclear program. During a joint news conference at the Pentagon with Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak, Gates also said, quote, "We're at a point now where Hezbollah has far more rockets and missiles than most governments in the world. Those weapons are a clear threat for Israel," and Barak said Israel is closely watching Hezbollah. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the number of frequent flyer miles you could earn for a flight that's nearly 30,000 miles long? Airink can. Airink supported the U.S. Air Force's C-5 aircraft modernization program by leading a test flight that flew through the Arctic cold in Alaska to the desert heat in Australia. The C-5 is 40 years old and is one of the largest aircraft in the world. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Save money at halfpricedc.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, halfpricedc.com has half-price gift certificates to O'Donnell's Sea Grill, the Washington, D.C. area's premier seafood restaurant, Indigo Blue Massage and Wellness in Vienna. Become a member and you get one free massage every month. And Clarendon Fitness Collective in Arlington, a team of fitness professionals working for you. See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
Your future begins now at TASK. For more than 40 years, TASK has solved some of the most challenging problems and supported some of the most complex missions our country faces. TASK is a leading provider of advanced systems engineering, integration, and critical decision support services to the intelligence community, Department of Defense, and civilian agencies of the federal government. Whether analyzing complicated systems and policy or developing new technology, TASK is a proven trusted partner to the United States government. Customers know TASK's commitment to excellence and integrity. Employees know the TASK commitment to innovation and teamwork. It's a workplace that fosters creativity and collaboration. Are you ready to partner with an energetic team? Are you looking to solve problems using leading-edge technology? Then TASK is the place for you. Find out more about TASK capabilities and careers at TASK.com, T-A-S-C.com. Come work with a team dedicated to preparing our country for tomorrow, today, at TASK.
For those dedicated to public service, meeting the growing expectations of the American people represents a challenge, but with smart project, people, and performance management, we can make the government more efficient. Hosts the Performance Institute, Federal News Radio, Federal Managers Association, GovLoop, IBM, and Young Government Leaders present the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit, May 10th through 12th at the Crystal City Hilton. Learn how leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce drive results. Register today at governmentperformance.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Frederick V. Rolando. He's president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Got almost 300,000 members. About 92%, I think you said, of the letter carriers actually belong. And we're running out of time here, Mr. Rolando, but real quickly, we're talking about the best service in the world from the U.S. Postal Service. I was in Europe last year, and I was in Canada a couple of weeks ago. And if you once you make the transference between euros and the Canadian dollar and whatnot, our postage stamps are the best deal in the world.
Absolutely the best deal in the world. And since you were there, you know we got better uniforms, too.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and I just want to mention, you're talking about the service. For the fifth year in a row, the American people have selected postal employees as the most trusted federal agency. And I think this comes to our delivery network, because it's important to understand that letter carriers, and I think your listeners know this, are part of every neighborhood in the country, delivering mail, doing the food drive, looking out for the elderly, doing the city readiness program, with experimenting with delivering emergency medicines and so forth, saving lives, thwarting crime, all that type of thing. It comes into play because this delivery network with the most trusted federal employees goes to 150 million homes 6 days a week. And if you look at future revenue opportunities, things that we could do with the business model in the future of using just the Postal Service in the neighborhood with green vehicles, dealing with partnerships with other companies to see, you know, we've just got unlimited services to the American people and businesses in the neighborhoods. And I think that's once we get past the reform necessary in Congress, come out of the recession, see what kind of volume comes back after the recession. We just need to take a good hard look at how we can use that and serve the American people.
Well, I know firsthand people who have family members whose lives have been saved when a postal worker noticed a letter buildup, the mail buildup. So, listen, thank you so much for being on. We're going to get you back here.
Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
I just want to make clear this 5-day delivery, which is what you started out, mm-hmm. is not a done deal. The post office cannot go to 5-day delivery. Only the Congress can.
Very good. Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good luck. That was Frederick V. Rolando, president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with another president, Carol Bonacero of the Senior Executives Association.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, exploring the challenges being faced and innovations being forged in the delivery of social and human services, with our guest, Seth Diamond, former Executive Deputy Commissioner of New York City's Family Independence Administration and the city's new Commissioner of Homeless Services. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The U.S. Geological Survey has awarded $2.7 million in cooperative agreements under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to several American universities and UNIFCO Incorporated to improve networks that detect minute changes in the Earth's crust caused by faulting in earthquake-prone regions. The agency says monitoring the changes, undetectable except through the methods of advanced technology, is an integral part of assessing the likely rate of large earthquakes. They say for optimal performance in real time, many existing monitoring stations will need modern sensors and improved communication systems. Funds provided through 6 cooperative agreements will improve monitoring capabilities by replacing obsolete sensors.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Get the Federal News Radio iPhone app, where you can listen to Federal News Radio, read Mike Causey's daily columns, and listen to interviews from all of your favorite shows on demand, like The Federal Drive, The Daily Debrief, In Depth, and Your Turn. Stay on top of the latest news affecting the federal government and contracting community, all from the palm of your hand. And the best part? It's free and easy. Go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We're just talking with Frederick Rolando about the proposal, and he wants to make that crystal clear. It is a proposal. It is not a done deal to eliminate Saturday mail service to save money. And he said that it's not necessary, and it would put the Postal Service in a death spiral if they did something like that. Moving on, now we have another president in-house here, and that is Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. Carol, thank you for coming in. And also, not only do you represent members of the senior executive service, but you were one, correct?
Indeed, I was one. I was a charter member. We don't want to think about when that happened.
Right, well, you were a child, clearly.
When I was a child government worker. Mm-hmm.
But you've been in since the inception, since the start of the SES?
Yes, and okay. I took an early out to the SEA full time. Obviously, I didn't have enough coffee this morning.
No, that's fine. We'll muddle through here. the Senior Executive Service. Can you tell us what it is and how many people there are? And what's the political career make breakdown?
Yes, it's obviously the top ranks of the career civil service. There are approximately 7,000 senior executives. About 6,300 of those are career. It is difficult to enter. There are very specific qualifications requirements, and there's a process in place to ensure that the selections are merited. And it has its own pay system and its own personnel system.
Right, and that's what brings us to the other thing. You guys recently did a survey of GS 14 and 15 employees. These are the feeder pool of people who would be candidates to go into the SES to find out what they thought about it, do they want to do it, or if not, why not? And what impressed me, it was a very large study. Normally, when you do a survey, you have 1,000 people or less, and you had how many responses?
We had almost 12,000 responses. Now, it was not a random survey because there is not a mailing list, but that's almost up to around 10% of the total universe. What was interesting about it is about 3,500 of those responding wrote some detailed comments, which were really equally interesting to the results of the survey questions. So we think it's something certainly worth paying attention to.
Well, I think maybe it's safe to say you were surprised at how disillusioned some people were with the idea of going into the SES. And I know you've done interviews all over the place, including here at Federal News Radio. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody has touched on you also went at the CHICOs, the Chief Human Capital Officers.
So, yes, because we wanted to overlay their views with the views of these 14s and 15s.
Because they tell you what kind of people they're looking for and what kind of people they're getting?
Well, we asked them about the quality of the applicants, the difficulty of filling positions. Now, interestingly, they did, by and large, say the quality of applicants was high, and it hasn't increased or decreased over the last 4 years or so. But about half of them are indeed concerned about their ability to fill vacancies that are going to rise because of retirements. And over 70% of those responding said they had vacancies that had been unfilled for more than 6 months. Having said all of that, the disappointing part of this is we were missing responses from a couple of very large agencies, namely DOD, HHS, DHS, Homeland Security, and VA, which is unfortunate. So we're not entirely satisfied with that.
Yeah.
Now, the other interesting part of this is even though the majority of the 14s and 15s responding to the survey said that the detractors outweighed the attractors to the SES and SL and ST positions, nonetheless, still more than 50% were interested in considering applying for them.
But there were more negatives than positives in their view.
Yes, and we had a couple of very interesting comments from 14s and 15s who said, I've learned more from this survey about these positions than I have from my agency, which was a real eye-opener.
Well, I pulled the OPM website, looked at the SES pay system, and there's two brackets, as you well know. One is for agencies with a certified SES appraisal system, and one is for agencies with a performance appraisal system. But the pay range is $119,000 and change to $179,000 and change for SES members. That seems pretty good.
It seems pretty good, except that the average pay for a senior executive in fiscal 2008, which is the latest OPM data, was just under $164,000. So the cap sounds high, but not that many senior executives are, in fact, earning anywhere near that cap.
Well, you told me, and of course these are generally not 9-to-5 jobs. Mm-hmm. When you get into the SES, I've been out socially with people, and they weren't fake calls, but their BlackBerries were buzzing. They were constantly on duty. What are some of the negatives that people cited?
Well, the biggest negative was work-life balance, which tells us it's another generation. As you indicate, there are lots of senior executives who are basically on call 24/7. In fact, one told me the other day that he's been informed by his political superior that he does expect to be able to reach him at all hours, and he should keep that BlackBerry humming. These 14s and 15s.
Recipe for a divorce, among other things.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Yeah. Do you really want to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and respond? And these 14s and 15s see senior executives in these positions. So they're not oblivious to what this takes. And a lot of them did write extensive comments about their concerns about the impact on their family and their ability to not only to work like that, but they don't see the payoff in it.
Right, and that really is a sea change, because not that long ago, people were supposed to work till they dropped and come to work when you were sick, and as you're saying, totally lifestyle change. I want to ask you something about SES pay, a different angle, when we come back here on WFED 1500 AM. If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology at Kaiser Permanente, we found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Tune in Wednesday, April 28th at 11 a.m. for ArcSight's panel discussion on cybersecurity. Guests will include Pablo Martinez, U.S. Secret Service, Congressman Michael McCaul, Richard Hale, DISA, Gordon Snow, FBI, and William Crowell, a member of ArcSight's Board of Directors. Topics discussed will include cybersecurity legislation, FISMA, the government's role in cybersecurity, and much more. Tune in Wednesday, April 28th at 11 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Save money at halfpricedc.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, halfpricedc.com has half-price gift certificates to O'Donnell's Sea Grill, the Washington, D.C. area's premier seafood restaurant, Indigo Blue Massage and Wellness in Vienna. Become a member and you get one free massage every month. And Clarendon Fitness Collective in Arlington, a team of fitness professionals working for you. See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero, formerly a member of the Senior Executive Service, now president of the Senior Executive Association, which represents the SES people. And interesting numbers there, Carol. You said there are, 7,000 SES and 6,300 of them are career people. So obviously the others are political appointees. You took a survey of GS 14s and 15s and Chico's, the Chief Human Capital Officer. And they, 50% or more, found some negatives about moving up into the Senior Executive Service, and work-life issues were what you cited as number one, which is at first surprising, and then when you think about the way the world has changed, maybe not so surprising, not a bad thing. What struck me as interesting about the Senior Executive Service is that there's no locality pay. So if I'm in high income or high wage, high cost San Francisco, and I move to Huntsville, Alabama, assuming there are any SESers, I'll be all right. But if I do the reverse, and more often than not, people are asked to move to the bigger cities, Washington being one of them, with a higher cost than many cities, that's a sacrifice in and of itself. And people are expected to move. Isn't that right?
Yeah, you are. Well, you're certainly part of the personnel system for the Senior Executive Service means that, yes, if you are ordered to move, you move. And if you don't move, you can be removed
yes.
from the service. How many geographic reassignments there are each year, unfortunately, the OPM data is not really available now. The really interesting issue to me is, in hindsight, we should have asked this and didn't, would have been, well, if the pay were sufficiently high, how much of a difference would that make to you?
Mm-hmm.
Because we do know that, for example, in the Washington, D.C. area, the top pay for GS-15 is $155,500. But there are many pay flexibilities available to agencies. And so that, you know, the pay may not be sufficient to overcome those detractors. But let me go back to the locality pay issue, because that went away in 2004 when the legislation was passed moving the SES to a pay-for-performance system. Unfortunately, that legislation was passed without any congressional hearings. There was absolutely no ability to really think through what the impact of that was. So everything, all pay adjustments in the SES are dependent upon performance. There's no locality pay. There's no virtually automatic cost of living increase. And that is a concern. And so we do have a number of recommendations that speak to that.
Well, if I'm an SESer right now, and you say the average, the latest figures you have, about $164,000 is the average salary for them.
Range? You know, this is interesting. Again, we have to look at 2008. That's the latest data. And this is where I think the rubber hits the road. Those who were rated as outstanding received on average a 4.1% raise a year ago, January. Those who exceeded expectations received 3.7. Those who were rated fully satisfactory, 2.6. But if you were a GS 14 or 15 in the Washington, D.C. area, you received, without regard to performance, a 4.78% pay increase. That's a big problem.
Yeah, so you're having people, but for the pay cap on the GS-15s, you would be having people making more than their bosses if this keeps up.
We do have a number of reports of that situation, and that is very demoralizing, to say the least. You know, one of my favorite stories, which occurred in a focus group, not one that we ran, but one that we helped along, was a senior executive who told the story about one Saturday morning. He's married to a GS-15, and they were having coffee. He's dressed to go to the office, and she looked at him and said, "Now tell me, is that extra $1,500 a year really worth it?"
Mm-hmm. Touché, yeah.
Because, in fact, that was the difference in their case, given the kind of pay flexibility she worked under.
Okay, so yeah, you're breaking down on an hourly basis, and it's even worse. So the locality pay, at one time you had it,
yes,
and then it was taken away?
Okay. Yes, and unfortunately, you really can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to go back. So what SEA is working for, and hopefully we will see legislation introduced in the next couple of weeks, is to provide that any senior executive SLST who receives a fully satisfactory rating would receive a pay adjustment that would be equal to basically that which would be received if they were in the GS system. It would be a cost of living increase. And also that the performance awards they receive would count towards their high three for their retirement.
Because that would make a substantial difference, because the awards can be, what, $10,000, $20,000?
Yes. And, you know, the performance awards we always thought we did have pay for performance because they've been part of the SES system from the beginning. And it seems to us that if you look at the data and what's happened over the years, that those performance awards have become a much more substantial part of compensation. That is, I think there's an inclination probably to give a performance award rather than a more substantial pay adjustment because it's a one-time payment.
That's right. You know, and the private sector learned that long ago, that you give people a bonus, and it sounds great, but it's obviously fully taxable, but it doesn't count toward your retirement annuity or the high three in the case of the government. So it's nice, but a raise would be better. Even a raise of half the amount would be better.
Indeed. And, you know, the bottom line on all of this is, as you know, an awful lot of senior executives are eligible to retire. I think at VA, the number right now is 50% could walk out the door tomorrow. And so the question is not whether we have 14s and 15s applying for these jobs, or I should say really 15s, that's more appropriate, but what is the quality of the candidates? Are we going to be getting the best and the brightest? We know that they are attracted by the mission of the agency, by the opportunity to contribute more, and so on. But we do know that enough of them are turned off by the prospect of the lack of work-life balance and the fact that the rewards aren't sufficient to overcome that.
What happens, the downside of an SES, they get ratings based on several factors. But what if you're not doing well or doing very poorly? Do you get no raise? Do you get bounced out? Do they put you back into the GS-15 ranks?
Well, of course, you can be removed and put back in the GS-15 ranks. More typically, what happens is that there is, as someone once said to me, not the golden parachute, the lead parachute.
Yeah.
Where someone might be reassigned geographically because this political superior knows they're unlikely to go, and so they will instead retire. Unfortunately, though, most often what you see are cases where people are dealt with unfairly, and that's unfortunate. I mean, we do believe that senior executives should be held to a high standard of performance, but if you're going to do that, let them know what those standards are, mm-hmm. give them an opportunity to meet them, give them feedback, and then if they don't, you know, do as you must and should.
But a little mental torture there going on. Find out what they can't take, find out what they won't accept, and force them to do that.
Well, unfortunately, some cases we know, you know, are situations where you can't really determine, are they politically motivated or is it a matter of, look, we just don't like you. You're not my cup of tea. You're not the person I want in that job. And, you know, you would hope in those cases that they would be handled better than they are very often. But in terms of performance itself, that's something that should be dealt with, but do it appropriately and fairly.
You have an awards ceremony coming up for presidential awards, and I've been to most of them. Love going. Thank you for the invite. I wish everybody could see that. I wish every citizen, they wish they'd televise this, the State Department, because when you hear the accomplishments of these people, and I know you've been reading all, boning out because you're the master of ceremonies, it's just absolutely phenomenal what people in the government are doing in the SES.
It is stunning, and it's very unfortunate that, that first the American public doesn't know, and frankly that I don't always think they're as appreciated by administrations as they should be, because they are the key to success, and many of them have done just phenomenal things.
Somebody, an SESer, told me that the first President Bush was the best, because he called people in and called them all in and spoke to them, told them they were, he was an insider and he understood what they did.
He called them over to Constitution Hall, and people, how many years later is this, still remember it. I call them cheap dates, because they walked out of there, they would have walked on water for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much, but give them some recognition, let them know you understand their role, you appreciate it, and you're supportive.
Great. Thank you very much, Carol Bonacero, and thanks for being with us, folks. Remember, this is archived, so you can listen anytime to the postal segment or the executive session. We'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. or whatever your local time is. Have a good week.
Congressional Spotlight on Federal News Radio is presented by AT&T, investing in its network today to connect America's small businesses to the dreams of tomorrow. AT&T, your world delivered.
Have you resolved to take better care of your type 2 diabetes? Lowering blood sugar levels to a healthy range can be a beneficial step. Begin today. If you have type 2 diabetes, you may want to consider volunteering for a clinical research study. Several research studies are evaluating an investigational medication to see if it's safe and can help lower blood sugar. You may qualify if you're at least 18 and take oral metformin alone or with other medications to treat your type 2 diabetes. Qualified participants will receive all study-related care and study medication at no cost and may be compensated for time and travel. Consider volunteering. Call Alternative Primary Care, 1-703-863-6616. That's 1-703-863-6616. 1-703-863-6616. Or visit newdiabetesstudy.com. That's newdiabetesstudy.com.
Managing time, personnel, and resources is a major challenge federal agency managers face every day of the year. Thankfully, Microsoft is standing by, ready to help with